Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Pretty in Punk, the punk rock podcast. I am your host, Fiona, your girly girl guide to the world of punk and rock music and everything in between. And today, this episode is a continuation of last week's episode. Last week, we dove into some iconic punk venues that helped shape the genre in the US specifically. And this week we're diving into the UK, specifically venues in London. Let's take a dive into the heart of London's punk history by exploring some punk venues that really helped shape the genre and the punk scene as a whole. The venues that I want to talk about today are the Roxy, the 100 Club, the Vortex, and the Marquee Club. These venues were more than just buildings or a place to play. They were catalysts for a movement that would forever alter music and culture. Let's start off with none other than the Roxy. So the Roxy was once a humble fruit and vegetable warehouse that was then transformed into the legendary punk venue that it is now known for. In the year 1970, it originally was under operation by Tony Ashfield, who was a reggae record producer. However, the venue went under many significant changes in ownership and identity before cementing its place in punk history. In 1976, the Roxy was under new ownership by lifelong partners Andrew Chizowski and Susan Carrington. They were managers for the band Generation X, so the two of them, as well as Barry Jones, revitalized the space by introducing punk bands, and this quickly gained traction. 2 weeks after the club's new ownership, the Clash were booked to play for the club's launch, and after that, so many huge bands started to play there as well, like Led Zeppelin, for example. Within just 4 months after its new ownership, the Roxy had begun to see performances by so many iconic bands as well, including Generation X, The Damned, The Jam, Sham 69, The Heartbreakers, Susie and the Banshees, and The Slits. This rapid succession of new acts and big names playing really brought the Roxy into the spotlight. It made it a cornerstone of the London punk movement. The significance of the Roxy, however, extends beyond just hosting these live performances. It became a sanctuary for punk musicians and punk fans alike. During this time, a lot of mainstream venues were actually banning punk bands. And that is because during the 1970s, when punk really started exploding, bands often found it tricky to find places to play because punk had this reputation and kind of this stereotype for destruction and rowdiness and aggressiveness. So a lot of risk-averse owners decided to cancel gigs and ban punk bands as a whole. But the Roxy was their safe space to play and be free and be punk. The venue owners, Carrington and Chizowski, sought to create this space where their managed band, Generation X, as well as other punk acts, could thrive without censorship. By taking over this once reggae-centered club and renaming it the Roxy, they provided this legitimate home for punk music. The Roxy's super inclusive environment for punk music not only supported the growth of punk, but also facilitated the discovery of so many new bands that are now punk legends. And many of the bands secured record deals after their breakout from the Roxy. The impact of the Roxy is so significant because it influenced both the music scene and these broader cultural trends. For example, Don Letts, who was the resident DJ, he played a really pivotal role in this because he often merged punk and reggae together. The venue also became known for having multiple live recordings with bands like the Buzzcocks, the Adverts, X-Ray Specs, and many others. And additionally, the band Crass actually played homage to the Roxy in their song Band from the Roxy. Despite its success and crucial role in really shaping the punk scene, especially in London and the UK, the Roxy had a really short lifespan and famously closed after only 100 nights. However, its legacy lives on by being remembered as such a crucial part in the punk movement. Now, eventually, the site did become a Speedo store, which, you know, how do you go from the Roxy to that? That's really interesting, and I wish they did something a little more music related, even if they didn't keep it as a venue. Maybe they made it into a record store or something. I don't know. A Speedo store, Really? I don't know. However, I will say there is a plaque commemorating the Roxy at its former site. On April 25th of 2017, a People's Plaque was unveiled by the Seven Dials Trust, honoring the key founders and figures who made the Roxy a legendary venue. So thankfully, its legacy does live on in that way, in a physical form, and it does get some recognition at its former site. So as long as this plaque remains, this definitely ensures that generations to come who walked past this site and read the plaque will know of its influence in punk music. Overall, though, the Roxy, now a Speedo store, was more than a music venue. It was really the heartbeat of London's punk revolution, especially because it was such a great place to play when other venues were not allowing punk bands. And it created such a vital space for some of the most influential and the most well-known bands to get their start and to play. Next up, let's take a dive into the 100 Club. The 100 Club, located on Oxford Street in London, has a really rich history of live music and music as a whole. Originally, this club was established as the Feldman Swing Club in the 1940s. It gained recognition by hosting jazz and swing legends such as Louis Armstrong, for example. And then in 1964, they rebranded as the 100 Club and started to expand their repertoire of musicians and music genres. This transformation eventually set the stage for the punk revolution that was to come. And you will see this venue played such a prominent role in the emergence of punk, not only in London, but just as a whole. So the 100 Club's really pivotal contribution to punk history was really cemented with the 100 Club Punk Festival in September of 1976. Known as the 100 Club Punk Special, this two-day event was a landmark moment in the evolution of punk as a cultural movement. The 100 Club Punk Special marked the first true moment in Britain where punk music emerged and was a unified, defined movement. It kind of stands as the defining moment when the British punk scene solidified and ignited into the music scene. And the bands that were in attendance are ones that are really cited with igniting this punk scene in the UK. So some of the bands that played over the two-day 100 Club Punk Special were Susie and the Banshees, The Clash, Sex Pistols, Subway Sect, as well as The Damned, Buzzcocks, many others. This moment was just like a definitive gathering that really cemented punk in place. This event really marked the first time that punk was presented as a cohesive movement. And even though at this point it was still such an underground movement and genre, it really started to propel it into the public eye and into the music scene as well. Over the years, as the 100 Club evolved, it continued to serve as a hub for both punk and hardcore, as well as other rock genres. In addition to hosting early performances by punk bands like Sham 69, UK Subs, The Addicts, this venue also embraced hardcore bands and out-of-town bands like Black Flag. These performances really solidified the 100 Club's reputation as a cornerstone for alternative rock music as a whole. Additionally, the 100 Club witnessed a lot of historic moments in the rock music genre altogether, such as surprise gigs by the Rolling Stones, and this really cemented the venue's versatility and broad appeal to all music genres. Now, despite its historical importance and significance, especially with the 100 Club Punk Special, the 100 Club started to face some financial difficulties, especially in 2010. It was threatened with closure. However, a very passionate campaign to save the venue came about after news of its closure. This campaign was supported by very prominent musicians like Paul McCartney, for example, and even led to a partnership with Converse. And thankfully, because of this campaign and and the crazy amount of support that it gained, the club remains open. And while punk bands don't completely dominate the schedule anymore, the 100 Club's eclectic programming, ranging from jazz nights, secret gigs, of course punk, and other rock and hardcore genres as well, it keeps the legacy alive. Today, the 100 Club remains as a very vibrant cultural music venue, and its interior is actually largely unchanged since the 1970s, keeping its legacy alive. It stands as a testament to its really rich past history, as well as its ongoing influence in the music world. From its jazz roots to its pivotal role in punk, especially with the 100 Club Punk Special, this club consistently provides a space for artists to thrive. The 100 Club has really solidified its place as a cornerstone of the punk movement in London, but also as a cornerstone for London's music scene altogether. Next up, let's dive into the Vortex. So the Vortex was located in London's Soho district and was originally a nightclub, a place to go dancing. However, in the 1970s, when punk music really started to shift into the music scene, the club rebranded as the Vortex and became this hub for punk music. Punk gigs at the Vortex were only hosted on Monday and Tuesday nights, but it quickly became such a crucial spot for punk music that this changed and punk was played constantly. And a lot of bands that we have mentioned previously, bands like the Buzzcocks, The Fall, Susie and the Banshees, Generation X, Sham 69, and The Jam graced its stages, drawing punks all across the UK. And the venue was often over capacity many of these nights. It was licensed for only 650 people. However, it would be packed with over 1,000 attendees. This really fostered that like chaotic group energy of punk shows. Vortex was another one of those venues that was just such an important space for punk music to thrive and evolve. And for example, Paul Weller of The Jam spoke about the Vortex and the chaos of the venue in his song A Bomb in Water Street, capturing the crazy energy that seemed to erupt at these punk shows. However, despite its popularity during the early days of this punk explosion in the UK, the Vortex sadly closed only after a year after its rebranding. Though this venue was very short-lived, its impact on the punk scene was pivotal, and it really cemented its place in the punk history in London. Following its closure, the Vortex was then transformed into a trendy nightclub known as Dirty Harry's. However, its legacy will always be remembered in punk history. Lastly, let's touch on the Marquee Club. So, the Marquee Club was another legendary venue in London. It opened its doors in 1958 and really became a cornerstone of the city's music scene as a whole. It was founded by Harold Pendleton, who was an accountant with a passion for jazz. And the club originally hosted jazz nights and also skiffle music, which, if you don't know what that is a genre of folk music with influences like American folk music, blues, country, bluegrass, and jazz, and it was performed on a mixture of these like manufactured homemade instruments. However, in 1962, it started to shift into more rock music, and for example, the Rolling Stones made their live debut performance on July 12th of 1962. And Pendleton also used the venue's success to launch the National Jazz Festival in 1961, which later evolved into the Reading and Leeds festivals. Over time, the Marquee Club adapted to shifting to incorporating newer musical trends in the music industry, and it then became a haven for punk music. And also, despite an initial ban on the Sex Pistols following a very controversial incident, the club eventually then welcomed countless punk bands. So a little backstory on this Sex Pistols incident at the Marquee Club. So the Sex Pistols were supporting Eddie and the Hot Rods, and the Marquee Club crowd was just not impressed with them and started shouting, "You can't play," basically just trying to heckle them off stage. And Sid Vicious then started to come back at them. And before the end of the night, after all of this heckling, the Sex Pistols then began to trash the Hot Rods gear, and Johnny Rotten even started to push pencils through the PA system. So because of this, they were banned from playing at the Marquee Club. And the club also began to ban other punk bands as well because they were just seen guilty by association of the genre. So while the Marquee Club's roots are in jazz, the venue really became another cornerstone for hosting these rock and eventually punk bands as well, of course, after this Sex Pistols ban. And groups like The Jam started to make regular appearances at the Marquee Club. Though its identity really evolved with the music scene, the Marquee remains etched in history as a really pivotal site for London's ever-changing music culture as well as punk culture. Overall, London and the UK as a whole is just so important in punk history. I mean, this is really where punk exploded. And of course, there are so many countless other venues, not only in the UK, but in the US as well. And I did touch on several of the US venues in last week's episode, and I would love to do more. I feel like this is a topic that I could make many videos on and talk to you guys about so many iconic venues and stories that happened at these venues, iconic performances. I would love to dive deeper into this with some more episodes in the future. Now, to end out today's episode, I want to mention my Song of the Week playlist. I have it on Spotify. It's linked in the show notes or the YouTube description, depending on where you are watching / listening to this podcast episode. And I want to feature two songs, and both of these songs I mentioned in this week's episode. The first song being A Bomb in Water Street by The Jam, and the second being Banned from the Roxy by Crass. So just so you guys can hear a little bit of punk history and hear some songs that were inspired by these venues and incidents that happened at these venues. So I think that these songs are the perfect complement to this episode to go on today's Song of the Week. Typically, I do one, but why not? Let's do two. There's no rules, especially in punk. There are no rules. So that's what we're going to do. And again, you can find that linked below in the show notes or the YouTube description, wherever you are watching. And that being said as well, if you want to stay updated with Pretty in Punk, if you want to see some short clips, you can find Pretty in Punk at Pretty in Punk Pod on Instagram and TikTok, and you can follow along there. And I post new episodes every Friday, available on all streaming platforms as well as YouTube if you prefer to watch on video. So with all of that being said, thank you all so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.